Hello and welcome to this workshop with Scrappy ABM. We've got everybody here and I'm incredibly excited for this one. It's the old way versus the right way, how we screwed up ABM and are finally getting it right. I love slightly provocative titles. Here's the main thing and why I'm excited we've got everybody here. Everyone on this workshop panel has previously or currently works at a technology vendor that was dedicated to the ABM space. They have built multiple ABM programs in multiple different areas. So I'm excited because we all have varying perspectives on what's now required. And it comes from a place of having been somewhat in the belly of the beast. So that said, I'm excited for today. That as we get into it, I'm going to pass it first to Amber. Can you do a quick intro?
Sure. Amber Bogie here. I am currently the director of global UCC marketing at GoTo Technologies. I have been in the ABM space since like 2016, maybe, in marketing for longer than that. And yeah, I've been there for a lot of changes and trends and disasters and all kinds of things. So I'm just always happy to chat with anyone on this topic.
Love it. All right, Jess, you're next.
Hey, everyone. I'm Jess Cook. I'm head of marketing at Vector. We're a contact-based marketing platform. Slight difference between account-based and contact-based. I'm sure we'll get into that at some point. My background actually is in copywriting, creative direction, and content, and made the jump to head of marketing just this year. So excited to be here with everybody and to talk about this very polarizing but exciting topic.
And quick shameless plug for Vector. I use it and I like it a lot. And if you're not following their CEO, it's very funny to watch the interaction between him and Jess. I wish that's how my CEOs interacted with me as a marketer. But conversation, Pete, who are you?
Hey, everyone. So Pete Larenko. I lead growth marketing at Flexera, which includes everything from field marketing to partner marketing to our account-based marketing campaigns approach. Why I'm excited for this is I've made probably every mistake you're not supposed to make 5,000 times to the point where I'm messaging people like Amber in the past, et cetera. What you should also know is I've worked in both enterprise and startup. So depending on the type of role that you play, I have probably strong opinions in both and what it means or how you can interpret it. So I'm happy to share some of that as we go or offline as needed.
I love it. All right. So before we dig in, what I want to do first is define ABM. No one likes definitions, but like we're going to use a bunch of acronyms. If no one knows what they mean, it's going to be really hard to have a conversation around it. So when I define ABM, and as I think through it, it's just a B2B revenue strategy that aligns marketing, sales, and customer success around a set of shared target accounts that reflect best customers. It's the world's longest definition because I keep adding to it because people keep finding loopholes for me. So that said, before we dig in, anyone have any objections to that being how we define ABM? I know this is a curveball. This was not planned.
Say it one more time. Let me hear it one more time. You did it so fast and so clean. I got to hear it one again.
B2B revenue strategy. So it's specific to B2B to make money that aligns marketing, sales, and customer success. So it's everybody. Around a set of shared target accounts, so same lists, and that list should reflect our best customers. So it's not a pie in the sky. We all want to sell Microsoft and Apple. It's like rooted in, these are our best customers, let's go get more of those. That is how I define ABM. Does everybody agree with that?
I would ask, are you including revenue ops, rev ops in?
Oh, for sure.
Okay, so that's bucketed in, and then I would just say data-driven decision-making.
Yes. All right, cool. I'll add those for my next time. So this will continue to become the world's largest and longest definition. But we're clear and specific. We know what we're talking about. So we're all aligned. That then begs the question. ABM, we are Scrappy ABM, for those of you who don't know, it's a marketing services agency. Probably 1 in 20 calls we get booked are like, so what's your platform? Can you go ahead and give me a demo? And it's like, so like, not what we do or who we are. So ABM is often associated directly with technology. So I'm curious, as we think through pre-COVID, which is when ABM came to be in the first place, Amber, come to you first. Like, what was the required tech stack to build an ABM program pre-COVID?
Okay. So back in the day, what I had, like everywhere, I always brought on Engageo, which is, you know, now part of Demand Base. But it was, I want to say it was like the first sales sequencing tool before Outreach and Sales Loft came along. Engageo now is morphed into something else, but it was the idea of doing these customized messaging and having some sort of automation element that was game changing at the time. Then there was what came in for me was then a display kind of network platform. Terminus was what came into my world at that time. Of course, there's others out there. And then the third thing that kind of came up pretty heavily was in more like later was content platform. So like an Uberflip or a Path Factory. And so those were my own experiences. Now we were doing direct mail and we were doing data digging and getting your ICP. But back then, direct mail was pretty manual and your ICP building and all the data was also pretty manual and having to dig and comb through not the greatest data sets.
Yeah. Also, I should have called this out. Amber, where did you work that was in ABM technology?
Oh, I was at Reach Desk.
So direct mail. And then yeah. Pete, where were you?
I was at Alice and then Path Factory. So I'm biased in those regards.
Oh, yeah. So I'm curious from your perspective, as you think about kind of that pre-COVID early day ABM technology stack, what were some of the things that you guys saw coming in?
It's interesting because it's evolved even pre-COVID. Early on, I think Amber was way more sophisticated than me, which is probably why I was messaging her. But for me, it was really just using a marketing automation tool like Marketo. We were using data providers to help us determine and enrich account data and know who the contact or decision maker we want to go after. And then I was predominantly running one-to-many type of campaigns. So it was using LinkedIn Campaign Manager and Google AdWords to run account target ads. To be very honest and transparent with everyone, that was ABM V1. And that was, in essence, the tech stack I had, truthfully. As we started to have some success with that model and we were trying to move more towards the what you might define as one-to-one or more personalized marketing, I fortunately was able to use Sixth Sense in those past lives. So that became our Engageo or comparative tool. When I was at Alice, I had the benefit of using Alice, which is now part of Sendoso, as a direct mail component. And I'm trying to think, those are probably the main ones. But candidly, and especially if you're in a startup and you're trying to get started, I was purely focused on one-to-many and really just using data tools to enrich data and determine which accounts to go after and then really just focusing on targeted ads.
So as we then think through the evolution of ABM, I feel like I get outbounds probably every day from 5 different new tools that are like, hey, like, can you demo our platform? That's like this really specific, like weird thing in the ABM space. So I'm curious, as you think about like your most sophisticated programs, like what were the tools and pieces of technology that you guys ended up actually implementing to scale your programs? And I don't mean today. I mean like pre-2022, before the AI boom happened and everything suddenly, we were talking about this right before we launched. Like I have team members that are building new products and platforms over the weekend. So like, feels like everyone can now build a product, but like before everyone had the ability to build new products, what was the most sophisticated tech stack you guys had in place? I'll go first to Amber.
For scaling specifically, I mean, so I I used Terminus Display and Uberflip to scale, like quite frankly. So a content platform, and then I'm forgetting like the Pete, like you'll have to say it better, how Path Factory was defined. I'm like saying content and not saying it right now, but please clarify. And then Terminus for display. So I use those two to scale specifically because I created like my one-to-one and one-to-many strategy. I kind of like worked in ways to scale them. So for back at this point in time, we would create one-to-one display ads, and then we would send them to maybe a more general kind of Uberflip page, or we would do the opposite, or we'd send generic display ads, obviously targeted by like vertical or persona or whatever. And then we would send them to a customized landing page. So those kind of flexibilities is what allowed me to scale faster, I'd say. back in the pre-COVID times.
Yeah. What about data and then tracking capabilities? Like, what were you guys using to ensure that you had the right people to actually go after that you could measure success?
Honestly, I'm like, that part of my memory bank feels fuzzy. I'm like, Salesforce tracking, like whatever was available in Terminus at that time, you know, connecting the dots, our own multi-touch attribution model.
Pete, what about you?
Yeah, pre-COVID, the ABM tools I used for scaling, as I mentioned, initially, probably like 2019, 2018, it was one-to-many, and it was purely account intelligence tools or data enrichment. And then, as I mentioned, ad campaigns via those tools. When I started to drive towards scaling, I would kind of bucket it as we continue to use account intelligence and data enrichment. Predominantly ZoomInfo has been the tool of choice for me, at least based on the roles I've had. Advertising and outreach, I continue to use LinkedIn and Google, and that's where a lot of the data was being leveraged from. For content and engagement, so to Amber's point, I've used PathFactory in my last couple of lives for two core uses. One, it was to use PathFactory to serve up content automatically to buyers based on a combination of what they've previously engaged with on your website or in your emails, et cetera, as well as to get the intelligence. So it'll show you like what content people are consuming from an account level or contact level. It was invaluable, but yeah, it's another tool, right? Amongst all the data points across different things. And then measurement was predominantly being done through a combination of the ad platforms, PathFactory. And then as I mentioned, I had Sixth Sense, which became kind of the tool of choice for helping identify signals. And then the signals is what we were driving plays around. So said a different way, previously, the way I was doing one-to-many campaigns was a combination of the business saying, hey, we think we should go after these accounts using whatever logic, industry, size, past customers. That has had different levels of effectiveness pre-COVID with tools like Sixth Sense or User Gems or other tools that are out there, or maybe using a tool like Vector. You might run a remarketing and that's one of your audience segments, right? And that's a defined play going forward. For us, we were using Sixth Sense to say, hey, these are signals of accounts that we think we should go after based on different triggers and signals. We're going to effectively drive campaigns at that. So that was that combination. The hardest part, Mason, for us, and I'm sure Jess and Amber can hit on this, was just trying to take all those data points and best summarize it and leverage it.
Yeah. The last question I just want to ask on this, like, early days of ABM is, I don't know about you guys, but when I did the math on it, it was like 60 to 80K for the ABM platform, 30 to 50K for data enrichment. Sending platform was like 25 to 40K plus all the actual like gifts on top. I mean, the math added up. There was like 200 is kind of like the entry point to build out the ABM tech stack. So think about that. Like, why was it so freaking expensive? Like, why did it cost so much money to just have an entry point?
Probably because the story was your enterprise whales are worth millions and millions of dollars and your conversion is going to be higher. And so in reality, if a company closed one account for $1 million in 1 year, obviously more than pays for the tech stack, but that's not necessarily always the reality for a lot of people that are being sold into these tools.
Anyone else have anything? I clearly have very clear perspectives.
I'm curious what your take is before I add anything.
Yeah, I think a lot of it too had to do with the fact that it's a very novel idea, right? When all these tools first came out, that like you could actually see the company who was interacting with your content or on your site. And these tools were able to hide a little bit behind that black box of like, well, we can tell you the account, but not much else. And it felt very like, feels like magic, right? Where it's like, oh, that's a huge insight I've never had before. And that's an edge that if I can pay for that, I'm willing and I would really like to have over my competition. So I think it was one of those, you know, it was like one of those competitive advantage plays in pricing where it's like, this is pretty novel, a new data point that not everyone can give you. And therefore we can charge an arm and a leg for it.
I agree with all that. I would add, I think there's always been this premise that to drive targeted marketing, the perception is it's harder than it actually may be, depending on how you scope it. So what happened is you had all these platforms coming out that were literally being positioned and sold as full suite platforms, the same way that us as marketers are all used to buying a tool like Marketo or HubSpot as this full complete solution for email marketing and contact database management, landing page development, things of that nature. And as a result, they were able to position and sell a full suite platform that promised solving a lot of these challenges around defining plays and defining accounts to go after. And they can help orchestrate a lot of those touch points for you and things like that. And they frankly had the ability to charge a big price because of the nature of what it was promising. And I don't know about all of you, my marketing goals have never gotten easier. They always seem to go up and they've just consistently gone up. So I think all of us as marketers are always looking for potential tools or solutions or ways to continue to drive more. And they were kind of historically promised as ways to achieve that. Now, whether or not it's achieved that, I'm sure the lovely two ladies here could probably better answer it than me, but I know selfishly, that's why I fell victim to it. And then I would talk to peers and they're using it. So I'm like, cool, if Jess or Amber's using it, I'm probably stupid not to.
Just to piggyback off of that a bit too, Pete, I think Mason, you even started with this, right? That like ABM's a strategy, but I think what happened is those tools became synonymous with that strategy. Mm-hmm. Like if you had the tool, you were now doing the strategy, which is not true, but I think they had the benefit of being attached to a whole new marketing way of marketing to people. And that enabled them to really bump up prices as well.
Yeah.
I've used all the tools, right? And I've paid for all those things. There's value in these tools. There's no question, but exactly to your point, Jess, that these came synonymous with ABM and that was never true. And at a certain point, I started to feel this like sense of responsibility to speak out to my peers, to let them know this is not a thing. Like a tool does not equate ABM. And to be honest, like these are the tools that you should use. And here's why, here are the pros and cons to using them. But I mean, it was really great for a lot of businesses, like in a very financially rewarding. We had a boom, like the gold rush of these tools, but a lot of people were bamboozled.
Yeah.
Yeah. We hit a lot on just the pricing and the promise that was provided. The one thing that, as I've dug in a lot on this, like the only thing we don't talk about is like, well, you spent $200K on a tool. Well, now you want to make sure you get the value out of it. So often people were not just buying the tooling. They were also then adding more responsibilities to the current team members, or they were trying to hire in more people. So when you actually look at the total investment to just run the tool, it was like $500,000. And CMO Coffee Talk is a private Slack community that many people run. And one person walked through their total ABM tech stack. And it was like $910,000 of just technology. It's like, I want to be super clear. This can get very expensive very quickly. Amber, you've got some thoughts before I move on to my next question. What you got?
Oh no. First thing is not surprised. Second, yeah. I hope it's an enterprise account, company. And then third was majority of that budget is coming from one tool.
Yeah.
It was a lot. So one of the things that I have really thoroughly enjoyed over the past couple of years, I don't remember who coined the term, but Pete kind of hit on this earlier of a lot of these tools were bundled functionality that people bought all of, but they didn't need all of it. And somebody coined the term of the unbundled ABM tech stack, because now there's tools like Vector that do a couple of things extraordinarily well versus doing everything that you could possibly need for ABM. So as we think through, one, what are the problems that we're still experiencing today? And then we'll move into two, how does that new approach to the unbundled ABM tech stack actually help to solve some of those specific challenges? So as you think about the programs that we're building today when it comes to ABM, first, what are the problems that you're actually still trying to solve with your current ABM programs?
We ran some research in Vector and just took a look at like account level versus contact level and where the intent actually come from. And what we found was that about half of all account level intent comes from one contact And about 90% of account level intent goes away when you filter down to your ICP. And so I think this is still a huge problem that people are trying to solve for when they have account level intent and they're still trying to understand, well, like, who do I go after? And how do I find that one person, right? How do I filter down from, oh, Coca-Cola's on my site to like the actual person that I need to get to, who it might not even be the person showing intent, right? So I think that's still a major issue that's still trying to be solved, is just like, how do I get to the right contact to actually like get this deal in motion?
Pete, obviously you've been building out quite a few programs. Like what are the main things you're actually trying to solve right now with ABM?
Yeah. So I think I would answer this by, if I kind of start with your initial question and where we are, where I am today. Pre-COVID, the tech led my strategy. I think Jess and Amber said it well. That's what I was guilty of. I was buying tech to try to help define the strategy and the way to best execute it. And then I would figure it out as I went. And that can get really costly. Now it's, I'm trying to add tech that complements the strategy that we're trying to achieve. And to answer the question, it starts with trying to first determine what signals make the most sense, or what plays do we believe we're going to be most successful with, so we can get more prescriptive. Said a different way, if your current target account list is 20,000 accounts, as all of you know, it would take a lot of money and a lot of investment to effectively reach and engage 20,000 accounts, whether it's one contact at Jess's point that does most of it, or maybe you have a buying committee and it's multiple people within a buying committee. That's a lot of budget. So for me, the first thing I'm trying to solve for is, how do I use different tools to identify the signals that make the most sense to help define the plays that we run and get really prescriptive? From there, it's figuring out the right mix of channels and strategies that shift from mass outreach, which is what I was guilty of as a marketer pre-COVID, and frankly, to some degree, even to this day, we all, I think, sometimes fall guilty to the idea of sending like thousands of generic messages, for example, to getting more personalized. The reason I loved and I joined Alice and Path Factory earlier, you know, the last couple of years, was I fell in love with the missions of those companies, which was to do direct mail that was more personal and relevant to someone's interests and needs, and vice versa at Path Factory. If we know that you love Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, then Netflix recommends that, right? We all see that on the interface when you log into Netflix. Path Factory operates very much the same way. For me, that meant that, how do I deliver buying experiences that are more unique, more tailored, more relevant? That's what's going to get your attention. And it, by the way, it also helps you save money and not be as wasteful, et cetera. So I'm looking at tools and technologies that help us design the right place, execute quickly, and shift from mass outreach to more like targeted, or what my boss refers to as like precision demand targeting and execution.
All right, Amber, I know you've got a couple thoughts.
Yes, I do. laughing about precision demand gen. Just wait, it's going to be a thing. Like it's going to be the next wave.
There's a book right there already called Permission Demand Gen. Right. Like,
let's bring it back. I was just having a thought process when you were talking though, Pete, about like what we as marketers still, I feel like in the ABM realm, I think some of the ABMers can fall victim to is forgetting that with this personalized experience does not remove like the top of funnel journey and like that brand building, you know, the whole thing. So I guess it's been a couple years now that I've been living with this whole kind of marrying demand and ABM strategy. And that's just how I think about ABM these days. I try not to have any sort of separation and figure out how do we live together constantly and benefit each other. But yeah, I'd say, I guess the question that you had though was, what are the struggles today, right?
Yeah, what are the problems you're trying to solve?
What are the problems? I think for me personally, it's almost actually connected to what I was just saying. I'd say, but the first would be what everyone's problem is, and it's data and telling that story of impact while dealing with the constant sourced, credited, back and forth. I had a lot of really good success with this at Reach Desk. By the time I left, I was in a really good place around kind of that whole all-bound kind of marketing sales is one source type of thing. But so yeah, data is definitely huge. And then I'd say in particular where I'm at is exactly what I was just talking about, is running a demand gen team and an account-based strategy, and having to figure out how to take a really heavy, like, lead focused company and their sales cycle and their average deal sizes, and having to work ABM in a way that makes sense for the business, which is not the entire business, and how to do that effectively while still managing the high velocity lead function and feeding an inbound team. And so, yeah, I could go on and on.
Yeah. I also didn't intend for this to be the case, but I think it ended up being this way, that like Vector is more in the startup scale up stage. Pete, I think you're already like very established mid market, right?
I think, yeah, we're like upper mid market.
Yeah. And then, sorry to put it this way, Amber, you're like very squarely enterprise. Like, you're kind of at the three stages. So helpful to hear the problems that people are experiencing. And then the other thing I want to just quickly call out is, Pete, I think you said something that we try to preach often, which is like build your strategy first. And then we think through strategies of playbooks at every stage of a buyer's journey. So like, how do people know you exist? Amber, you said it well. No one can buy from you if they don't know that you exist. So like, first make sure they know you exist. And then at your stage, I think most people know that GoTo exists, but it's probably more an issue of like product awareness because you have such a large product suite. So it's not just brand awareness, but like, okay, well, what are all the problems that we actually viably solve? And then based on problem awareness, what are then the individual viable solutions that someone could explore? And then how do you then know that they're actually entering into a buying cycle to then activate your sales team to make sure the meeting goes and gets booked? Mm-hmm. So we think about just different playbooks at every stage of that journey. And then we break those playbooks down by data, distribution, destination, and then direction. Direction is tracking. So like, who are you going after and why you're reaching out? What channels are you going to use to get in front of them? Where are you sending them? And then how are you tracking it? So I try to use both the buyer's journey, or we refer to it as an account progression model, with that 4D framework as a diagnostic tool for where our gaps are, to then specifically fill in with technology. So like, prime example of how we're currently using Vector is more at like that meaningful engagement or that solution awareness component, because they're on our website. We educate everywhere else. So if they're on our website, we've been able to then track, they are likely brand and solution aware, because our website right now is only product pages. So like, that's just unique for our context. Mm-hmm. So that's how I like to think through actually like tool implementation today. It's just like, where's the specific gap in the strategy, and then solve that with the right resource. I'm curious, as you guys are continuing to build out and scale your programs, what are the required tools that you guys absolutely use as a non-starter today to build out your ABM program?
I want to go back to, Pete brought up signals, and I think that's such an important part of like these modern programs now. And there are a lot of common ones, right? There's job changes and site visits and like all of that. But I think there are some like for each business that feel like, ooh, what's the ownable or like very unique signal that we alone, it would matter for us. So for us, for instance, ours is number of ads running, like at the moment that they land on our site or interact with an ad or are doing competitive research. That shows to us like they're a good fit. They're already running ads. They're doing some sort of research around intent or signals or ABM advertising. So those kinds of signals, like that's a little harder to like pull up into a tool. So a lot of it now is the AI workflows and the clay tables and like enrichment software that allows you to get at that information that even kicks off like, okay, what do you do next?
Pete, I think you had something to add on to that.
I think, I try, for us, we're actually trying to focus on simplifying a complex tech stack. Because again, I'm guilty of it, having so many things, utilizing probably 5% of all of the different components. So the way we're focused on doing that is really being aligned on what it solves. And by the way, making sure that they all play nice together, right? Because part of what Amber and Jess have also touched on is having data that's easily accessible and tells a story. I think Amber, you were hitting on this. That is a challenge, especially when you're trying to drive marketing sales alignment or to help the business understand marketing's value. And listen, one thing that we're not discussing when it comes to ABM or marketing in general is trying to demonstrate marketing's impact on the business purely based on source pipeline is flawed, right? Especially in the, if you work in a tech space where you likely resell through partners and in different buying channels, sourced attribution has gaps. So for us, there's a variety of things we're trying to solve for. One is, how do we pick the right accounts? That's a combination of using a tool like Sixth Sense, which we recently added to our tech stack to help identify high intent and other accounts that we may not have previously determined make sense for us to go after, based on our own ICP modeling, looking at past customers, past users, things like that. The next for us is really, how do we determine how to send the right message? So there's a combination of tools for all of you that we're focused on. One is like AI writing tools. That's for us. Writer is a new tool that we've added to our tech stack. I think Sixth Sense has some of these capabilities. We're not using it right now. Amber, you mentioned Outreach or Sales Loft. Those tools have those components and capabilities now. So that's big for us. Measurement tool. We're using Full Circle to try to help us shift from just showing marketing sourced pipeline impact to a combination of, we do measure marketing sourced. We're also measuring marketing's contribution to all pipeline, regardless of source. So we're not fighting over attribution and like, hey, Jess, you should mark that marketing because we drove that event. Like, that's, you don't want to be infighting within your own org. So Full Circle is helping us show all the touch points that go into a deal. It's also great for education on, hey, if your sales cycle is 6-12 months, which I feel like everyone's sales cycle is lengthened since COVID, you can show all the touch points and what that buyer journey looks like, et cetera. And then personalization tools for us, that's how do we not just send the right message, but really make sure it's more personalized. For us right now, that's Path Factory. I'm blanking other things. Sorry, my head's all over. But Path Factory is the big one with Sixth Sense and things of that nature. And we are looking at direct mail or sending platforms as well. We have a tool right now that does some of it. It's just, we're probably going to likely replace it. So I just don't want to mention it. So that's probably the big ones, but it's really that shift to how do we go after the right accounts and how do we fix the measurement, make it cleaner, not just measuring source. And then where are all those different tools that can help us personalize the touch points and things like that. And then they have to play together. And if they don't, it's a deal breaker.
Yeah. The orchestration piece, which is the fancy way of saying like making sure everybody knows what to do and has the ability to actually do it. I think the thing that we missed a lot with those early days of ABM platforms, because none of them talk to each other. So I love that call out. Amber, how about you? As you think about the technology you guys are building out with ABM today, what are some of the recommended tools that you've got?
Well, that's a big one. So you kind of talked about how unbundling like platforms, right? So I was just thinking about, as you kind of shared that out, I feel like at least when I got started, nothing talked to each other, right? And if it did, it was one or two tools. It was a big deal to have an integration. So I've kept that kind of philosophy myself throughout all of the years. I never really got on the bandwagon of platforms. And my thought process always, and like always was and still is to this day, is what is your bread and butter offering? That's what you're good at. Everything else isn't good enough. You bought it, you built it quickly. Like, I'm sorry, we've all been there. We've just haven't had success with everyone can do everything kind of mentality. That being said, like, that's just my own thought process around it. And then to round that out, I think that if you have everything, you have nothing when it comes to tools. If you have too much, you're not doing anything because you're over, like we all know the tech bloat, right? So that's just like a whole nother thing. So to finally get to your question of what are we building on? What are we utilizing here? We have a pretty pretty like robust tech stack. We've obviously done some cleaning up to minimize it. And we have an incredible operations function in the business that is very advanced in building, like building out chat agents and bots and using things to connect things. So there's a lot, but to be honest, we are primarily leveraging, I'd say like Sixth Sense is probably our heaviest utilized tool from at least my team on the marketing side and how we're leveraging that. There's so much to do. I went to the Breakthrough Conference last year and I just said to myself, maybe it exists already, but we need to have Sixth Sense admins the way that we have Salesforce admins. We need full dedication to a product that is that robust and more than one person, in fact, because there is an endless amount of stuff to do with it. So I've been here for a little over a year and we're still just barely eating the elephant of what we can be doing. We have gifting platforms, we've got meeting bookers, we've got a handful of tools, but there's still a lot of work to do on the strategy. And I'd honestly say that, and this I think is where you and I see eye to eye, Mason, is you don't need to have all the tools and you can do things, you know, simply. So we have a lot of stuff at GoTo, right? But I've had to focus more on the foundation and the setup and like the function of the strategy before really digging into too much with the tools. And we're making some really good headway on some of that, just segmenting and thinking about our campaigns in a more effective manner.
I love it. And then most certainly not least, Jess, I know you started off with Signals, but I'm curious, as you guys are building out some of your programs, what are some of the tools that you guys are currently using?
Well, we are in tiny little baby step phase of our own kind of using our own product to do all the things that our customers are doing really well. So we're a small team, 15 people total, 2 people in marketing, right? So we use very proudly our own product just to really understand like who is showing what kind of intent, which signals make the most sense for us and pulling those in, building audiences. And where we're putting a lot of our eggs are in the ads basket, because again, that's what we do and what we're encouraging our customers to use them for. Seeing really, really incredible success with customers, you know, building ad audiences within Vector and using them for very segmented one-to-many ad audiences. So that's really exciting. A lot of it also goes back to just Amber mentioned this too, was that RevOps, we have a fabulous RevOps lead in Sarah McNamara, and she's done so much work just in our CRM, like taking everything we're getting from Vector and pushing it back the other way. Like, what signals are we getting from people interacting with our ads and showing intent? How can we put that into our CRM as activities? How can we use that as scoring? So I think we're on the polar opposite end of Pete and Amber here, obviously, because we're just so small and just getting started, getting our feet wet. But yeah, we're proudly drinking our own champagne. It's working. And it's been a lot of fun. I love ads. Like, ads is like my favorite place. Ad creative is like, oh, I love that. And so there's this really fun process of the signals we're seeing, building the audience in Vector, matching the message to the type of intent or signal that we used, right? And all of that really working seamlessly.
Yeah, and if I could just piggyback, Mason, like, Vector might be small, and granted, the people on this call are, in theory, the ICP that Jess, you and the team would want to go after, but I see Vector everywhere, and I hear about Vector everywhere. So I think the point I want to stress here is the strategy matters first and foremost over that tech stack. And for a small business or startup, however you want to categorize it, who may not have a lot of resources and may not have a lot of budget, they are getting in front of their ICP without overcomplicating it. Mm-hmm. And as someone who's made literally too many mistakes with purchasing tech, and I can't tell you the number of times I've purchased a certain platform we don't need to name, implemented it, promised it to be like the solution, and it was not the solution. And by the way, it hurt my credibility. And everything else was good outside of that platform, but because of the cost and the premise and the promise that was likely delivered around it, mm-hmm. it actually set us back, which is why I can confidently say, and I would stress that, figure out what you're trying to solve for first, right? And if we were to summarize this, get the foundations right. to start, which I think Jess and Vector have done really well. Who do you ultimately need to get in front of, and how do you best identify them? That's like foundation number one. And it seems basic. So many of us get it wrong. I have. And I feel like I've been doing this a long time now. I maybe look younger than I actually am, but like I've gotten that wrong many times over. Then it's like, how do you identify them? Those first party data points, that's like using a tool like Vector, website visits, CRM, things of that nature. Third party intent data, that might be a tool like Sixth Sense or Demandbase, Bombora, HG Insights. There's a ton of tools that do that. Then it's that predictive modeling. Again, tools like Sixth Sense, Demandbase, I think even tools like Clay and ZoomInfo and stuff now have like predictive modeling capabilities. And then it's, what do you want to say? And how do you best deliver that? And getting the right channels, whether that's using sending platforms or using LinkedIn ads or whatever it is. But that's really your foundation. And then it's how do you customize those content and those experiences to really stand out? Because by the way, when everyone's using the same channels, if you don't nail the messaging and the brand and the positioning and do it creatively, it just becomes noise. And I think this is where Vector has stood out, because the combination of what you're doing plus influencers and how you're conveying it, making it simple and really personalizing and optimizing it for your target audience, it's working and it stands out. But like Mason, that gets lost. We talk about ABM. Candidly, I could probably ask 10 people and get 10 different definitions of what ABM actually is. Even your definition.
For sure.
Like if I think about how I define ABM, and maybe it's just because I'm a parent of two really little kids, I try to keep it simple. It's like, imagine you're trying to pick the people you want to invite to a party. Like my daughter's birthday was on Saturday this past weekend. Instead of inviting everyone that my daughter might have been in class with, it's how do I choose those few special guests that's going to make sure that my daughter's time is like the best it could ever have with their favorite games, snacks, music, right? And in marketing, that's really what we're trying to do. It's how do we pick the few important few, not everyone, the few important companies, and give them messages and help that's perfect and right for them. And that sounds very basic, but as someone who's gotten that wrong many times over, if you can nail that, the tools become easy to pick and select from there. But it starts with this. And I think, Jess, kudos to you and your team. You've gotten that right despite your size. And it just gets overlooked too often.
So Pete just wrapped us up really well. That was truly, that's the point of this, is when we talk about the old way, I think everyone here would agree. We all got enamored by what the technology could do and said, that's going to inform how we move forward. And as I look at some of the best ABM leaders, it's always strategy first and making sure that we've actually nailed what we're actually trying to accomplish. What's the offer? Who's the audience? Where do they live? And then making sure that now we know what the actual goal is. There are some roadblocks. Let's now solve roadblocks. And that might be people. That might be additional budget. That might be technology. But again, I think the way in which we approach ABM has radically flipped in just the past 2 or 3 years to no longer be technology first, but it is actually effectively, finally, strategy first. So I invited these people here because, sorry, I'm going to label everyone. I've looked up to Amber and Pete as ABM leaders for quite some time. And as I look at Vector, I think Vector is one of those brands that is leading the charge in the new way of doing ABM. So just as a quick context, like some of the people that I think are doing it well and have been there and done that. So that said, as we wrap up, Amber, if you want to find out more about you, where would you point them? I was about to say, is everybody just going to say LinkedIn?
LinkedIn.
I have one more. I'm on LinkedIn, but I have a podcast with my CEO, Josh, called This Meeting Could Have Been a Podcast. And it's a lot of fun. And it drops you into our one-on-ones. And you get to hear all of the things that we talk about and discuss and argue over and laugh about.
I love it. All right. Last thing before we close out, each one of you, if there's anything that is parting wisdom that you feel like we didn't cover off on that you want to make sure as people think about launching a program today, what is your one piece of parting wisdom? And I'm going to go to Jess first.
One piece of parting wisdom. Know your audience like you know yourself. You can't do ABM if you don't have all of that very granular kind of product marketing persona knowledge nailed. So don't start with ABM before you have that fully solidified.
I love it. P? Pete, what you got?
I think I said it, but honestly, I think if you're just starting, talk to one of the people on this would be a good start. Like, I think one last thing I would share as wisdom, if you will, is I tried to solve everything myself for way too long in my career. And when I started reaching out to Amber to have on a podcast to learn more about ABM, or I reached out to different people, whether it was you, Mason, or Sam Colney, who might be known to some of this audience, my career has leveled up like tenfold, because more often than not, those people have either struggling with the same things and can guide you and not make the same 9 million mistakes I feel like I've made, or at a minimum, like they become that champion for when you have those days, which we all have. I feel like that's every day these days, but like when you're having those days where you question why you're in marketing and you're doing marketing, they become like your anchors and your roots to helping you figure things out. So that's what I would stress. Like, don't try to figure this out yourself. Mason, thank you for doing this and providing education and insight. But I think the best solution is just reach out. And I don't want to speak for Jess and Amber, but one thing I've also learned is when you reach out and ask, more often than not, people say yes. And it's intimidating, but people generally want to help each other. You just got to ask. So for what it's worth.
That's, I love it. Such a good one. I have my own, but I will further piggyback on yours with, there is an incredible community of marketers and ABMers out there that do want to help and want to connect. Two of my best friends I've met in this space through introductions. One of them I was introduced via Sangram, and another one listened to a podcast of mine and asked me for help. They were both at my wedding, my baby shower. So like really the community is something to definitely to leverage. And Pete, that podcast was so long ago. It's so crazy.
I still remember it.
Yeah, me too.
I could add one last thing, sorry, I feel like I'm taking over. Don't create an ABM program just for the sake of it, y'all. Like, and if I, and Maison, I don't want to like take business away from you. I'm a big believer.
I turn way more people away than you can.
I think you mentioned something once before, but I'm a huge believer in this and the importance of it. But it should be to find opportunities that can drive the best revenue results for you. And if that's not the core objective you're solving for, then I would probably ask you to pause, step back and ask, like, why are you doing this? And that's where reach out to Mason or Jess or Amber or myself or whomever, and just pick their brains, because getting that right first helps scope everything else.
Yeah, my piece was set, like, realistically speak to your leadership team, like realistically set goals to your point, Pete, if it's for the wrong reason, because the leadership's like, oh, we're going to do this thing and it's going to be the best, or, it's just like overproduction, over theatrics. I've been in places where I've came in and they've had the promises made already. And I've said, this is not happening. This is when this, you have to set those realistic goals with your leadership team or with your sales team, because that is ultimately your success or failure.
I love it. A couple of things before we close out. Go listen to episode 149 on the Scrap ABM podcast. I actually directly break down all the people that are not a fit for ABM, because there's a lot of people that aren't. Like, even if you're a B2B organization, you may not need to run ABM, and like save you a lot of heartache and probably your job if you go listen to that episode. So please, for the love of all things good and holy, if you're trying to build an ABM program, just go spend 10 minutes and see if you're even a good fit for it. And then last thing, sincerely, talk to any of these people, myself included. We have many, many, many conversations over here at Scrappy ABM around ABM programs. And quite frankly, I think we disqualify over 30% of our first calls just because they're not a fit. So just like, I'll tell you, because I want you to keep your job. So hopefully this is helpful as a new way of thinking around how to build an ABM program. Thank you all for being here as panelists, and then audience, thank you for being here. This has been Scrappy ABM. We'll see you guys in the next one.